The following is an encore episode of L.A. Catholic Morning. Due to a power outage this morning at the beginning of the show, we are only able to bring you the latter half of our interview with president of Spirit Jew Studios, Rob Kazmark. We were, however, able to bring you our interview with Carl Truman and John Martinoni. We apologize for the inconvenience and hope you enjoy the show. God bless you, and thank you for listening to Archangel Radio.
I, of course, was on your website last night in preparation for the show, and I watched the McGivney Miracle Baby twice and cried twice, Rob. Thanks.
You are most welcome. Yeah, that's, especially if you're a parent, gosh, if you want to watch another one that's going to make you cry, it's even sadder, and doesn't have a happy ending, but the, Kendra Castile, so it was that young man in Colorado, there was a gunman in the school, and he basically sacrificed his life for his classmates, and, there's powerful stories out there, and there's powerful stories, with a Catholic message. And that's what really gets me up in the morning, is because it's what inspires me, and I think it inspires greatness in other people, because that's really what we want. I mean, you want to, I think art to make art is fine, and people can do that. But I really believe that making art and making films to inspire other people is really, you know, what I'm supposed to do, and what we're supposed to do is in Catholic media.
Indeed. I couldn't agree with you more, because like I said, when I first encountered some of your work, like, I think you were probably the first Catholic production company where I noticed you guys were doing drone flights. Because it's just cool. Like
that interesting. Yeah.
I used to be a creative director for an advertising agency. So I pay attention very much to the camera angles and the differentiating shots and the lighting and all of that stuff. So I was like, who are these people? Like this is really good.
Thank you. I will say we were on the early days of drones. So on the early days that we had to bring a soldering iron out when we were droning, because it was it was very handmade DIY time. And so sometimes you didn't know if the camera or drone was coming back when you brought it up in the air. So a lot different than it is now.
That is hilarious.
So what kind of projects are you have on the slate going forward? Because, I mean, there's a lot to dive into if our listeners want to go see it. It's spiritjuicestudios.com, and I do encourage you to go there. You're going to find some beautiful work there. So what are you looking ahead for the rest of this year and into 2022?
Yeah, so right now we're just wrapping up a documentary on St. Joseph for the Knights of Columbus. So very excited about that. A lot of the heavy hitters in the church talking about St. Joseph and the impact he's had. We're also finishing up, this is a Spirit Jew original, it's on Gil Hodges. Really, really excited about this. So Gil Hodges was one of just a popular baseball player that was passed over for the Hall of Fame. He was a Catholic, really lived his faith on the field and off the field. So that's coming out later this month. So super excited about that. You can find that on our website. And I'm happy to give you guys an exclusive, if you guys would
Ooh,
like it.
Rob. Come on, Catholic Media, let's go.
All right, so I thought about, I'm like, should I break this out now? Like,
Yes, you should.
All right. So I have two small boys, and just like we looked at Catholic Media, and we're like, why isn't there good Catholic kids programming? Waited for a long time. My oldest is 5 now. All right, we got to really get on this. So I'm very excited to announce that we're diving into Catholic kids programming. We're having a Kickstarter launching in about 2 weeks. We've already shot the pilot. The show is called Juice Box, the Catholic Kids Show.
I love it.
And think of like if you mix Mr. Rogers with Blue's Clues. We have Steve Agrisano as sort of like the Mr. Rogers vibe, and we have Melinda Simon is sort of like the young, fun, spunky, answering questions of the faith. So the first show was on prayer. We teach kids the sign of the cross. I'm just super thrilled. So our Kickstarter is going to launch soon, so hopefully get enough funding to do a whole season of it.
Okay, so wow. The important thing to find out here is, does Steve Agrisano put a sweater on for the show?
The answer is yes, he does.
Yes! Yes!
Yeah.
Because I could see Steve wearing a cardigan. He would look great.
Oh, that nailed it for him. That's how he got it.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Rob Kazmark, thanks for joining us. His website is spiritjuicestudios.com. Go check it out.
Some of the videos will make you cry. Just saying. Thanks, Rob.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Oh, that's good. Good stuff.
Totally gonna cry.
Totally.
You'll cry.
Started our Monday morning off.
Indeed.
With things.
Beautiful.
Coming up next, Carl Truman's going to talk to us about his article, Are Women Still Human? Because apparently there's a lot of things about that on the internet these days. Stick with us here. LA Catholic Morning continues.
Welcome back to LA Catholic Morning here on Archangel Radio. I'm Todd Sylvester with Alan Taylor, Mike the Great. He's over there doing his thing along with the Ripster. On the line, we have a regular guest, Carl Truman. He is a professor of biblical and religious studies at Grove City College in Pennsylvania and a senior fellow at the Institute for Faith and Freedom. Good morning, Carl.
Morning.
So we're looking at your article here. I'm seeing it in the public discourse. It's in a couple different places. But it's asking the question, are women still human? And you wrote this with Alexandra DeSantis, correct?
That's correct, yes.
Well, to me, doesn't that seem like a pretty obvious answer, right? I'm confused.
Well, you'd have thought so. But, of course, it all comes down to what you think being human is. And the burden of our article is that we have a pretty dehumanized view of what being human is these days, and that underlies many of the problems in our culture, not least in that article we were looking at the issue of abortion.
Well, then talk to us specifically, what is it that is different, even let's say in reference to the difference between men and women, why is it that we feel that this whole understanding of looking at that and looking at, to me, the wonder and beauty of being able to bring children into the world, how is that seen as dehumanizing now, Carl?
I think it all goes back to the principle that the Genevan philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau articulated. That not everybody's read him, of course, but I think he captures the spirit of the modern age beautifully when he says, man is born free and everywhere he is in chains. When you think about that statement, what Rousseau is really saying is that the thing that most marks out human beings is their freedom and their autonomy. And once you have a notion of humanity in terms of freedom and autonomy, then every other person becomes first and foremost potentially a problem to your self-fulfillment, a link in the chain, if you like, that binds you. And that, of course, means that, for example, having children, how do we think about children? Are children those upon whom, towards whom we have responsibilities and upon whom they're dependent upon us, or are they things that get in the way? And of course, the modern abortion debate generally takes the view, the pro-choice side generally seems to take the view that women get in, the babies get in the way of women being fulfilled. But to be truly human is to be autonomous. It's to have complete control over one's body. And therefore, anything such as a baby in a womb or a child that inhibits that actually inhibits fundamental humanity.
Yeah, we've got that classic video of former President Obama talking about his daughters, because the question arose in one of those town meetings if they were pregnant, and he literally said, I wouldn't want them to be punished by a baby. And I just remember that, Carl, just thinking, oh my Lord, that's your grandchild. I don't think you understand that, right, Carl?
Yeah, and I think that's a big part of the problem. We imagine ourselves today as being first and foremost free and autonomous. We therefore imagine the purpose of life is our own personal happiness as a result of that freedom and autonomy. We don't realize that actually, certainly as adults, the defining thing of an adult is that we have people who are dependent upon us, and it's our obligation, our responsibility to fulfill those needs for those who are dependent upon us. A child is not an alien intrusion into our life. A child is actually one of the things that makes us human, one of the relationships of responsibility and dependency that characterizes us as human beings.
You know, Carl, it seems to me that the world has tried most adamantly to redefine what is humanity and what's going to make you happy as a human. And so they've kind of put it in this box. You have to be free. You have to be not have any responsibilities. And they neglect one of the things that brings us our most fundamental human joy, and that is love in a family. And they've discarded that as not important. Yet, if you think about it, that is the essence of our humanity, that we have deep joy and love for our children and for our parents. And for the world to so cynically toss it away and actually not give any other thing in its place except freedom, it's doing all of us a disservice. And it seems like we have to take a deep dive into considering that. And the world does not, it appears to me, does not want to. Is that where we're headed?
I think so. The sociologist Philip Reeve said that as we move towards what he called the therapeutic society, a society preoccupied with my sense of well-being and happiness here and now in the present, he said two institutions will fade away, the nation and the church, because they make demands upon individuals. They demand sacrifices from individuals. I would add a third to that. I think the family also fades away, precisely because families demand that our identity is grounded in a network of relationships with others, some of whom upon which we are dependent and some of whom are dependent upon us. And I think that's what makes us human. And as you rightly point out, that brings many joys. It brings pain and suffering at times. There's nothing worse than talking to a parent who's lost a child or had a rebellious child or wander away from the family. But it also brings many joys and many comforts. I don't want to be free and autonomous on my deathbed. I want another human being sitting by me, praying with me, seeing me into the wide blue yonder, so to speak, at that point. Human relationships are critical to our happiness, and they require relationships of dependency and obligation.
I agree with you 100%, Carl. In fact, I would even say that you have it correct in order of the importance, because you can get away from the nation. You can kind of disconnect yourself and say that I'm going to not pay taxes or something like that. You can certainly ignore the church. But when you are connected to a family, that's something that's innate. Like you can't. That my mom and dad are always my mom and dad. Like nothing's going to change that. My children, even if I try to skirt my responsibilities and take off and sail around the world, they're still my children, and I'm still responsible for them, even though I'm acting like a child. So I don't know, though, Carl, how to change the direction of our culture, because the paradigm truly has shifted right now, don't you think?
Yes, it's. I think the immediate future is very, very bleak, and I don't think there's any way we can turn the ship around at a national or grand cultural level. I think what Christians need to do is have strong families at a local level. I think the way that we witness to the world at this point is by taking the church's teaching on family seriously and demonstrating it in our own lives. I think we have nature on our side, which is a good thing. I always think of Peter Singer, the most notorious advocate of abortion and infanticide in our generation, the Princeton professor, still cared for his mother when she had Alzheimer's disease. And when somebody asked him, isn't that inconsistent with your basic position, he made the sort of Freudian slip. He said, well, I guess it's different when it's your mother.
Oh.
And as you just said, you know, families are families. There are those powerful bonds. So I think we have nature on our side, and now could be an opportunity for Christians to show the world that actually families can be beautiful, that we have something here that is worth investigating. Not going to do it at a national level, I don't think. It has to be done in our neighborhoods where people see how we relate to members of our family.
Mm. It feels like a lot of young people are afraid to step off the cliff with this in many ways today. People are taking longer to get married. The society and culture has put a fear into them of marrying, you know, in the Catholic marriage, a sacrament for life, raising children that God gives you. And we get so inundated, especially our young people, on the pressures of the culture. Oh, no, you should wait. You don't want to make a mistake. We've become very fearful in developing that. So I think, to your point, that we have to talk about that. Be not afraid to go ahead and live a faithful Christian family life, because that's what's going to bring you ultimate joy. And you have to really, I think, be conscious in brushing off the world's fears these days with this generation.
Yes, it reminds me of a sermon or a lecture. I can't remember if it was a sermon or a lecture. My friend Mark Dever, who is the pastor of Capitol Hill Baptist Church in Washington, D.C., once preached, which was all about essentially saying, you know, young people, cut down your options early. Burn bridges. Close yourself down. Get married, get committed, because that's the way of serving the Lord, and that's the way actually of finding your, you know, if you want to find real fulfillment in life, that's the way of doing it. And I think what you've said is very much to the point of that.
Yeah, but see, Carl, I'm telling you, the world just does not agree with that. I've been married 31 years. My wife and I are very blessed. We have 10 children. And my life, I can't imagine anything that would kind of try to come into the walls around my life. I'm so protected that, and it's cake. I mean, it is just so pleasant. And yet some people are like, geez, Todd, you can't, like, you know, run off and do whatever. And it's like, why? Why would you want to do any of that stuff, Carl? That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely, it's absolutely true. I think there's nothing more beautiful than interpersonal love, whether it's the erotic love of a man and his wife, or whether it's the familial love of children, grandchildren. I've got my first grandchild coming next March, and my wife and I are great looking forward to it. It's the greatest present we've ever had.
Amen. You're going to love it.
And, I think that the world is selling people dramatically short. It's very interesting that often when you have these advocates of highly promiscuous lifestyles on the television, they're generally interviewing middle-aged to young people. Mm-hmm. They don't interview the elderly on this front. Mm-hmm. I've never seen an 80-year-old swinger interviewed on the television because I think those people grow old, broken, and lonely, and it doesn't fit the narrative. So as I say, I think the best thing we can do is to have great families as a demonstration to the world around us that that this is actually the way it's meant to be.
Yeah, we watched a documentary over the weekend, and I won't say, because I don't want to criticize the person, but it was someone that was involved in fashion and design, and they said that they had decided early on not to have children because they were going to work and travel, and they didn't want a nanny raising the child. And I'm like, okay, all right, you know, I get that perspective. I don't agree with it, but I get it. And now that they're aged and they've got a warehouse full of stuff, Carl, literally. They showed in the film, they went through the warehouse full of stuff. And they even gave a presentation where they had some of the fashion stuff in a museum. Like, oh, look at this. Isn't this great? It was an incredible sign of secular humanism. Like, this is what you get, people. You die alone with stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tragic when you think of that. Of course, part of the problem is people don't think they're going to die. That's why COVID has created so much panic, a reminder of our mortality. But as it's very, you know, the Bible makes it very clear, you can't take it with you. You can build great big barns tonight and have your life taken from you tomorrow. So yes, the materialist approach to life is ultimately a bankrupt approach to life, I think.
Do you think this message is starting to touch any hardened hearts? I mean, do you see any glimpses of that, maybe in your students, in the feedback you get from your work? Because there has to be a point where we in society recognize we're on a bad path.
Yeah, I think my students are not representative of society as a whole. It's a conservative Christian liberal arts college, and a lot of the students I have in class do get married early and want to have children, which is a true delight to witness. I think that it's very clear from the wider culture that the bankruptcy of materialism is something that the rising generation sees. But I'm not sure they're looking for the answers in the right places. I think what we're seeing is concerns about ecology, et cetera, all of which may be good in themselves and all of which may be worthy causes. But I'm not seeing in the wider culture any dramatic return to what I would regard as a traditional and indeed correct notion of what it means to be a human being.
Mm-hmm.
Mercy.
I know. I think
I mean, I'm sitting here, you know, as a man, you try to fix stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just sitting here, Carl, just thinking, how do we change this? Because the irony is, we'll get people that'll come into our family experience. They'll come to like a Sunday brunch and they'll look around and they'll be like, this is incredible. And it's like, it's really not. It's just a big family. That's all it is. And it's biscuits and grits. I mean, it's not a big deal, Carl. It's just the fact that we love family. I mean, that's where we focused our energies. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think that's a great thing as well. Again, if we can set aside the vision of, you know, okay, we're going to take over Congress and we're going to transform America in 6 months. That's never going to happen. But what we can do is invite people to our home. My wife and I do it with students at Grove. And that can be a powerful experience for people. And you may never see the result of that. But if somebody sees your family and is inspired by their experience and their vision of your family, and they go off and have a family of their own like that, then that's a wonderful thing. We may never see it, but to go back to my earlier point, I think doing these things at a local level is powerful. We're in the game, if you like, of transforming lives, not nations, if I could, you know, put it that way. I can't change Congress, but I can have an influence on the students who come in and out of my life on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think we need to focus, because that's where each of us as individuals is powerful.
Amen. Yeah, you got that. Carl Truman, thanks for joining us this morning. You can see his article on Ethics and Public Policy Center. And we look forward to talking with you next time. Always good stuff.
Thanks, Carl.
Thanks very much.
Great. Coming up, friend of this station, John Martinoni. He's got his new book out, Blue Collar Apologetics. Right, Mike?
Sure is. Talk to him in a second here.
Oh, stay with us. LA Catholic Morning continues.
If home is where the heart is, then my heart lives by the bay.
Welcome back to LA Catholic Morning here on Archangel Radio. Todd Sylvester here with Ellen Taylor. Mike the Great's at the Command Center along with the Ripster. Regular guest and friend of the show, mm-hmm. John Martinoni, who's been involved in Catholic media for glory. John, how many years now? I mean, when you've been in Catholic radio forever and working up there in the Birmingham Diocese, correct?
Yeah, I actually got started on evangelical radio with a Catholic apologetic show in 1998, oh, and then started at EWTN Open Line in 2003 and did that for 17 years.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. That is tremendous. Mm-hmm. I love it. And now you're coming out with this new book, Blue Collar Apologetics, How to Explain and Defend Catholic Teaching Using Common Sense, Simple Logic, and the Bible, put out by EWTN Publishing. Now, what inspired you to write this?
Well, just that book is based on my actual conversations with Protestants, atheists, evangelical Baptists, whatever folks want to call themselves, non-Catholics in general, who are asking questions or maybe even attacking the faith. And I just started doing that, and I started putting this in this email newsletter that I have that has grown to over 40,000 subscribers, and people several years ago started asking, can you put all this in a book? And so I finally got around to it in the last year and put it all down and got it edited, and EWTN was great in publishing it. So that was it. People were asking, put all this stuff in one place, John, and so that's what I did.
Now, apologetics is a challenge for a lot of Catholics, because your everyday Catholic in the pew, they may be there and fully believe, but they are not quite of the level being able to explain it if somebody comes at them, because we know all the standard things. Where is that in the Bible? You worship Mary? Those kinds of questions. So how does blue-collar apologetics, how is that different than other apologetics, or what kind of approach did you take in writing this?
Well, I took an approach, like the title says, simple logic and common sense. And then I throw in the Bible, too. Because like I said, for Catholics who are dealing with non-Catholic Christians for the most part, the number one question we get is where in the Bible is, and then you fill in whatever doctrine or dogma, you know. And so I was in that very same position. I was asked those questions. I didn't know the answers. So I started finding the answers, and I started realizing, you know, I don't have to have the Bible memorized in order to respond to these people. And I don't even have to, you know, I got a little cheat sheet of, you know, a few verses here and there. But the better response is a response of common sense and logic that helps to plant a seed in these people who are asking these questions about the faith or attacking the faith, and you just turn their questions around on them. You know, basically the book uses the same principle as judo. Use the other person's force against them. So when someone comes to evangelize you and ask you these questions, well, you just turn it around and ask them some questions. You know, like, hey, where in the Bible does it say Mary was assumed body and soul into heaven? Well, where in the Bible does it say she wasn't? Is that, you know, common sense?
Yeah.
You know, and so just turn it around on people. So I came at it from the viewpoint of the average person in the pew who is just like I used to be, that when they were asked the question, their first response was run. Run away. Run away.
Yeah.
I don't know how to answer this. I can't answer it. So run away and avoid. Well, I teach Catholics how to be not just not be afraid of these questions, but how to respond to them in such a way that the other guy is going to start being afraid to ask you questions.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Normally my encounters that I have with individuals who have issues with the church or so forth, John, they've been pretty peaceable over the course of my life, and I'm very grateful for that. But there was one time where some people brought me into a situation. They're like, well, here, talk to Todd. He's the Catholic guy. He, quote-unquote, knows everything. I was like, what a setup. Like, this is going to be horrible.
Yeah.
And this guy came at me with both guns just blazing. I'd never even met him, John, and he was angry at me and just wanted to take my head off. And I will admit, I got a little kind of defensive. I'm backing up like, geez, you know, I don't even want to deal with the situation. I got pulled into this without any warning or anything. It was like at a dinner party of all things. And so the guy's like, well, da, 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 da. And finally I was like, John, I said, do you really think that Jesus would do that? I mean, would Jesus want that? And for whatever reason, I don't even remember exactly the full context, but because I asked that question, the guy was stunned into silence. Like, it just punched it and took the air right out of him. And afterwards, he's like, I got to think about this. I was like, well, praise God, because you were so angry at me. I wanted to stop this whole thing in the first place. Right, John?
Yeah, well, there's a priest up here who's a former Baptist minister, and he will tell people, he just said it a few weeks ago in his homily, people call me up and say, you know, Father was talking about you in his homily. I was like, what did he say? And he said, well, he was talking about how when he was Baptist and thinking about becoming Catholic, that he asked you a question, John, about the Eucharist, because that was his stumbling block. How could a piece of bread and wine and some wine become the body, blood, soul, and divinity of Jesus Christ? And I remember the conversation after he brought it up, and he looked at me and said, John, answer me that question. I said, well, don't you think God could do that if he wanted to?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, huh. I never looked at it like that.
Right.
Yeah, God could do that if he wanted to. And that helped getting him over the hump. He became Catholic, and now he's a Catholic priest. And it wasn't any big, deep theological thing or philosophical thing or look at these verses in the Bible. It was just, well, couldn't God do that if he wanted? Well, yeah. So that's how easy it is to turn a situation around and to plant a seed. And I tell people, the angry ones, they're the ones, you know, in Revelation, Jesus says, would that you were either hot or cold, but if you're lukewarm, I will vomit you out of my mouth. The people who are angry at Catholics and Catholic teaching and the Catholic Church, well, they're angry because there's something, you know, I'm not talking about the ones who, well, I want a divorce and remarry and you won't let me. I'm talking about the ones who just, from a doctrinal standpoint, who think Catholics are teaching evil and all that, and they're angry about, why are they angry, I ask people. Because you get angry when there's something deep down in your soul that's being pinged, and you don't like it. And so the response has to be one of anger to try to keep your conscience down, because your conscience is going, you know, they're right. They're right. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to hear that. And so I say, these are the ones I welcome the most, because you just stay calm, cool, and collected when somebody's really angry at you. And even if you don't plant a seed with them, you plant a seed with all the people around who are watching, because here's this angry guy at the cabin, and here's that Catholic just standing there, just calm and serene, like you imagine Jesus Christ would do in a certain situation.
Amen. We're speaking with John Martinoni about his book, Blue Collar Apologetics. What's cool about this book is that you get very specific about, well, if you're dealing with a Baptist, or if you're dealing with an atheist, or if you're dealing with someone in Eastern Orthodoxy. I mean, you go all over the place here, John.
Well, basically, the bulk of the book is aimed at non-Catholic Christians and Protestant Christians, in other words, those who use the King James Bible, whether they call themselves Evangelical, Baptist, Methodist, Lutheran, etc. Then I've got a chapter on atheists, and it's just a common-sense approach, and a chapter on Eastern Orthodoxy, but the bulk of it is aimed at Protestant Christians, which, because that's my experience here in Alabama. This whole book grows out of my personal experience and how to answer their questions, and not just answer their questions, but what's different about this book than any other apologetics book I've seen, is that I give you four strategies on how to deal with people, not, oh, here's these verses you can use to talk about Mary's Immaculate Conception, or these verses to talk about the youth. It's like, here's four strategies that are very common sense based, logic based, and anybody and everybody can use these strategies. I tell people from 8 to 108, this book, it will, you know, you'll be able to get something out of this book that you can use directly in your conversation. That's where I say I'm so easy to duplicate. You know, you can hear all these people with the PhDs and everything, and you're like, oh man, that's good stuff, and I love it, and it'll edify you. But then you go to repeat that to somebody, like, now what did he say? What did she say? You know, and you can't do it. But my stuff is so basic, so easy, that it makes sense, and you can take it and make it your own and apply it to whatever situation you're in.
I do like it, and just to highlight some of the strategies for our listeners, and the book is Blue Collar Apologetics by John Martinoni, who we're speaking to. I like the answer to the ignorant Catholic, because we've got those. And then I like this, how to be offensive without being offensive, meaning we don't want to offend people, but we do want to offer them the truth. So that's just some of the interesting dynamics of who you're speaking to, because I think, John, you make a good point. People are going to respond differently from their base of knowledge.
Yeah.
No, good. John Martinoni, the book is Blue Collar Apologetics. He's a friend of the show. It's on EWTM Publishing or Amazon, wherever books are sold.
Thanks, John.
Todd, Ellen, appreciate it. Y'all have a great day.
You too.
Also, his website is BibleChristianSociety.com.
Yeah.
All right, who's coming up tomorrow, Mike?
Yes, tomorrow, Father Pat Driscoll returns. No continuing education this week, so he'll be he'll be answering the question he was going to answer last week, which was, can someone really be denied Holy Communion? Dr. Elizabeth Mitchell shares her article, Can Our Confidence Have Limits? And Father Tad Pohulchik shares how to get a conscientious exemption.
We thank our LA Catholic Morning sponsor, Fast Signs, from business signage and vehicle graphics to festive yard signs and party banners. Fast Signs is here to help. Call the Fast Signs in Mobile or the Eastern Shore, or visit fastsigns.com and like us on Facebook. More than fast, more than signs. We hope that you all have a fantastic day.
Yeah. Thanks. Stay dry.